Today on a special interview episode of the Critical Mass Podcast, I still don't have theme music, but I am joined in the reaction chamber by author Phil Elmore. We talk for a little bit about Simon Vector, the new novel, the new transmedia experience from The League Entertainment, and touch briefly on some of Phil's other projects, include the two Mac Bolan adventures that he has in stores right now, the new Super Bolan adventure Radical Edge, and Executioner Final Judgment. You can find both of those wherever fine books are sold, right? So without further ado, let's go to the interview. All right, I am in the reaction chamber with Phil Elmore, guest on the show multiple times, and he keeps coming back. Welcome back, Phil. How are you?
Thank you, Winston. I'm good.
Now, you've got a lot of stuff going on, and I think what we decided brought you to the show today was the League Entertainment's release of Simon Vector, the novel. What can you tell us about Simon Vector?
This has been really exciting. It's gotten a lot of great advanced commentary from, you know, Hugo Award-winning authors. Mike Resnick said really nice things about it. Simon Vector is a science fiction action novel that we have been working on for quite some time at the Entertainment to bring to market. It's available as both a paperback and as a Kindle download. We did a promotional free giveaway over the last several days. Unfortunately, we're beyond that period now, but that was in part in order to thank all the people who supported League Entertainment through the crowdsourcing of the initial financing for the book. We went to Kickstarter, and we did a successful financing campaign through Kickstarter. Crowdsourcing like that gets a lot of press lately, but successfully achieving your funding through Kickstarter is something else again. It's something of a challenge, and you know the folks at League always manage to do things right when they do it, and this was a success. So to thank everyone, we gave the book away for 5 days. I think something like 1,200 people downloaded it during the free period, and there's been some really nice reviews on Amazon. I reviewed it as well because I think it's a great book. Granted, you know, since I work for League Entertainment, it's not like I'm completely unbiased, but I also think it is a genuinely good book. The book was written by Jack Holding, who is actually a pseudonym for John Jackson and Ken Chapman, who are the founding partners of the League, and they put together one hell of a story. It's based largely on a prison planet, so those of you who enjoy prison genre stories and space prison is actually a genre, you know, all by itself. And if you really enjoy action, that's the focus here. It's definitely a fast-paced, I called it a horror, sci-fi, thriller, action-adventure novel. It has elements of survival horror like Steve Perry's Alien novelizations and Stephanie Perry's Resident Evil novelizations. Very familiar to book like that. There's the horror elements, the science fiction elements, and above all, just a focus on action and adventure, telling a larger-than-life, fast-paced story.
That's awesome. And, of course, the incredible cover by Johnny Atomic.
Well, yeah, and that is the... I'm spoiled because I work for a company that has one of the best artists in the business on the payroll. I mean, you know, Johnny is one of the founding partners of the League, so anytime he puts out a cover, it's always really good. And he has yet to send me anything that I didn't go, wow, I really love this. And I get to see all kinds of stuff the public never gets to see. So.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. Now, you mentioned there was the, we missed the free giveaway period. That's okay. Kindle actually lets you...
It's a very reasonably priced Kindle book. I think it's $3.99. on Kindle right now, but don't hold me to that because that might change or I might be wrong. There's also a paperback version that you can buy right now, and it's doing really well, getting really good reviews. I have yet to hear from anybody who's unhappy with it. I saw some advanced reviews that were very complimentary, and I love it. I've read it a couple of times now.
Well, the first chapter or maybe the prologue are posted on Scribd.
Yeah.
So that's where I read my initial contact with Simon Vector was through that, and it does look really, really good. I'm looking forward to reading, you know, the copy I've got waiting for me on my Kindle. We'll get to them all.
One of these. In this book, it's a you and hold you, keep you up too late at night while you read it. We starts out, it's set mostly on the prison of Alfred Draconis, the most remote prison in the Empire, that is the world that we're building in the Simon Vector series. And we have the mystery of what is Simon Vector. You're not really sure, is he a hero, is he an anti-hero, is he some sort of force that will destroy us all? And that's kind of the mystery that propels what is definitely an action thriller, sci-fi, horror, survival type of book.
Yeah, and that comes through, and just even in the prologue that I read, I'm really, really looking forward to finishing it. Now, you used a phrase that I find really descriptive of what you're trying to do at the League Entertainment, that said you are building a world, and the League has an approach that they describe as transmedia entertainment. You want to tell us a little bit about what that means and what it looks like?
Well, transmedia is one of those terms that I think got invented to say something that was already being said in terms of multi-platform. Multi-platform storytelling, giving the audience a way to access the world you're building through multiple venues, is simply just making your work more accessible. One of the ways we're doing that is in the coming months, starting one per month as of beginning of June, I believe it is, we're going to be releasing novellas that go with Simon Vector. Now, you don't have to have read the novellas to read Simon Vector. You don't actually have to have read Simon Vector to read the novellas. But each of the novellas takes one of the characters in Simon Vector and expands on that character and gives you his backstory, the things that make him tick. And in some cases, it's really a pleasure because, in one case at least, it's a character who has very little what's called screen time. In another case, it's a character who you really want more of when you see him in the book. The four books are, the first one is called Correction, and is the story of Gerald Rooming, the Mad Doctor of Mars. And those of your listeners who actually read Simon Vector know who that is, and he's really, really horrible.
Oh, no.
Well, this is the story of how the horrible Dr. Rooming got to be so unpleasant. And then the next book is Corruption, featuring Jason Booth, who is an Imperial Marshal. So it's very much, has a very frontier, almost Western feel to it. He's definitely, if this was an old West story, he'd be the guy with the tin star whose job it is to bring justice to town. Then we have Deception, I believe is the next one, featuring Colonel Rex Mason, who figures prominently in Simon Vector. And the last book is, it's one of the characters who really you don't see too much of in Simon Vector, and he's very interesting. And so he gets explored fully in Miscalculation, Skull Morgan's story. And the four novellas, one per month, really give readers a chance to get to know these, I won't say minor, but the characters who don't get to spend a lot of time on screen, with the exception of Mason, and this gives the reader his backstory and how he came to be. So it's really very satisfying. Anybody who's ever watched a movie and then pored through the extra features because they didn't want the movie to be over knows the feeling that is, I really enjoyed this book and I want more. Well, here is the more. If this was a DVD, these would be special features.
Yes. Right. Are you buying the trading cards that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
It's
okay.
It's really a beautifully interlocking set of stories.
So where and when will we be able to obtain the novellas?
Each one will be exclusive to the Kindle store, I believe, when it is released, or to Amazon, it'll be Kindle, and I'm not sure if they will also be paperback, that I don't know, but they will be Kindle books to start with, most definitely. I'm assuming there'll be a hard component, but I don't actually know that for a fact. So we'll see when they hit release, but the first one comes out in June, and that is Correction, featuring Gerald Rooming.
Awesome, we'll have to keep an eye out for that. In the
meantime, also, you can always go to SimonVector.com, which is the website for the world of Simon Vector. Whatever's going on with Simon Vector, whatever's available, wherever it is available, you'll be able to access it through the website, whether it's purchasing through Amazon or purchasing directly through the League, or you'll get updates, you'll be able to see what's available, you'll be able to see the titles of all the stories. So anyone interested at all in Simon Vector should just go to SimonVector.com for all that news.
Okay, well, that was my very next question, so there you go. Does the League have any plans to do more with the Simon Vector IP other than the novel and the novellas? Are you looking at doing some? I remember as part of the Kickstarter that Johnny Atomic was doing some prints, some artwork that he was making available as wallpaper. Is there a plan to roll out some artwork releases or maybe a music release?
Well, I know
or
that there were certain pieces of art that were given away as specials for those who contributed to the Kickstarter campaign, but Simon Vector is very much an active property. We're going to be plotting the sequel, Simon Vector Praxis, it's called. John and Ken will be conferring on that, and I'm going to be meeting with the League this weekend, actually, at the Nebula Awards down in Arlington, Virginia. I'm sure the topic will come up. And Simon Vector will have a sequel, or at least we're planning to do one. And the novellas will come out. And whether or not there are other multi-platform entries in the Simon Vector world, nothing is definite yet, but there's a lot of opportunity there, and it's really exciting. Some of the only comments on the novel, in the reviews for the novel, were, this is a really interesting world, and it very much is. The Empire is a horrible place. It's just bureaucratic, and it's sort of crushing in its control over its citizens. Really, it's everyday life.
Bureaucracy. Bureaucracy is so oppressive.
I'm sure that John and Ken drew on that influence when they wrote it. The world of the Empire, it's ruled by, formerly, in what is the oldest story of every empire everywhere, it was formerly something slightly less dictatorial.
Right.
And is now run by an empress when it was previously run by an emperor, when it was previously run by a government. So,
sure.
You know,
sure.
The endless succession of control over the lives of its citizens, I'm sure, is something that will be very familiar to everyone who reads it. It's really interesting, and I know I sound like a giddy school kid when I talk about it, but I just enjoy it so much. It's
well,
been really a privilege to work with the League on it.
You know, Phil, that's why I like having you on the show. You get as excited about this stuff as I do, so I don't have to feel bad.
In some ways, I almost feel like, you know, the people you really, the people who really have the most to say about Simon Vector are, of course, its authors, Jack Holding or John Ken.
Sure.
But working with the League, the whole point of an IP development company is we're developing intellectual properties. So where something like a Simon Vector or Spirit of St. Louis, the collection of short stories that I'm editing for the League, where those go is really the sky's the limit. It could become anything depending on what happens to the property itself.
Right. Now, you mentioned the Spirit of St. Louis. That submissions for that kind of closed last year. You've been editing since then. When are we going to get to see the Spirit of St. Louis?
Well, that's a good question.
We haven't set a date. Didn't mean to drop that one on you.
Working on it since. We set a date for the closure of submissions simply because we couldn't just leave it open forever.
Sure.
Since that time, a lot of exciting stuff has happened in terms of who's involved, who's on board for the project. As editor of it, it's just been an exquisite opportunity to be able to work on this collection. And the world of Spirit of St. Louis is so awesome. All of the authors who have contributed to the collection have said, I could not wait to work on it because this universe is so exciting. And part of it was because I love the flash fiction setting. I like being able to work with flash fiction because it really forces the author to dispense with all the pleasantries and get right to the heart of the matter. And then the challenge becomes, how do you build a world in so few words, and how do you contribute to a universe that is completely new when you have so little paper space to work with? It becomes a fascinating problem to solve, and the way the contributors have solved it is really impressive. And just like no one person can be as imaginative as a group of people together, you get to see what some of these other authors, a few of whose names will be familiar to the reader, more than a few, actually, you get to see how they chose to approach that problem and what they added to the universe of the Spirit of St. Louis, this blasted world on whose surface the only civilization travels in these giant trains across the surface of the blasted Earth. It's incredible to see it take shape, and I'm really privileged to be part of it.
And if we want to check out maybe what that's going to look like, there's some cover art there of course, by Johnny Atomic, and then a short story that you've written.
There's nothing firm yet, because we haven't yet set a date. We've been really focused on Simon Vector and some other projects. But a couple of people have actually asked me about Spirit of St. Louis within the last few weeks. It's intriguing, and I think it caught people's interest last year when we did the open call for submissions, and they haven't forgotten about it, and that's really cool. It's nice to know that they haven't forgotten, and when people started asking me about it, it was a nice validation of what we're doing. So at such time as there is some news on that front, I will, of course, provide it to you, and I'm very excited about it myself.
Excellent.
I feel like the guy who works in the office at the North Pole, who gets to see all the correspondents go in and go out of Santa's workshop.
Right.
There's all this great stuff that I know that's going on that I'm not allowed to say.
Right.
So, there's a lot of great stuff coming out of the league, and just as a company, the entertainment we're producing, the storytelling that we're doing is really rewarding.
So if in the meantime we want to find out a little bit more about Spirit of St. Louis, you can go to spiritofstlouis.blogspot.com. I think that site is still up. And just
I believe it is.
Yeah.
We haven't actually done anything with the website since we did the open call.
Well, there's a
Updates to my website if there are any relevant ones. Anybody who ever wants to check me out online can go to philelmore.com, and I usually will do updates as far as what the league is doing. And at such time as it's appropriate to direct you to league sites for the official news, I'll be happy to do that.
Excellent. What I tend to do with a lot of these is when I find a site that maybe is not updated frequently but that I want to stay in touch with, you know, I add it to my feed reader. So anytime that RSS pops up, I get the news.
The upshot is Spirit of St. Louis is definitely still very much in active development. It's just behind the scenes right now.
Sure, that's all right. These things, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, you know. Although I suppose with Web 2.0 technology, Rome.com could be a... Anyway, speaking of league properties and things that you may be a little more involved with than Simon Vector, tell us where Duke Manfist is at these days.
Oh, Duke. Ever since I started writing Duke Manfist, which began life envisioned as an action parody, John Jackson and I actually were talking about fiction we did not like.
Oh, no.
And he was talking about a particular action novel, and he said, oh, the character's name might as well have been Duke Manfist or something equally hammy like that. And I started laughing, and I said, that's really funny, all by itself. And I think originally we envisioned it as just a badly written action novel that would be funny because it was badly written. And what it became is this just incredibly charming action spoof that I have so much fun writing. Duke Manfist lives in a universe that is populated by just bizarre stuff. A lot of it is tropes from action entertainment. He's constantly given a new partner, and his new partners have a life expectancy of, you know, a few hours to a few minutes sometimes.
Sure.
All of his partners they all have their name legally changed to this name, because otherwise you have to memorize hundreds of new names every year. And Duke goes through his adventures fighting on and off villains like the Cursed Hand, who is his primary nemesis.
Right.
And a variety of other bizarre and strange people, like, you know, the Cursed Hand has henchmen named Croc Punchington and FF McArmbreaker.
I think Ninja Crime Lawyer is my favorite.
Bizarre characters. What I wasn't prepared for was how Duke Manfist would take over my brain.
Oh, no.
The catchphrase that just kind of happened, we didn't set out to create a catchphrase, but Duke eventually, it was clear that the way he solves his problems is with my fist, and I have to say, and the hashtag with my fist actually started to trend on Twitter. Duke Manfist has a Twitter
I remember
account.
That.
Actually, the Duke Manfist Twitter account tweeted recently something to the effect of, I had this dream that I got really drunk and was asleep since Christmas. Which I thought was endlessly funny, because of course Duke's been sort of dormant since we did the Christmas special, and that's where we are today. We did a Christmas arc, and it was so much fun. Leading up to Christmas, we released like an adventure a day. It was sort of the 10 days of Duke Christmas. It was awesome.
It was
and
incredible.
It's all about Duke getting assigned to take over for Santa Claus. delightfully absurd. I hope it doesn't sound arrogant, but I read it and I laugh at it just because it's so silly. And Duke started to take over my brain when I walked into the store one day and I saw a bunch of people dressed in suits that were clearly management at the grocery store having some sort of meeting in the back.
Oh, no.
And I just remember thinking to myself, oh, look at those pencil neck Nancys, which is exactly something Duke would say and not something that I would think.
Right.
So I grabbed my head and was like, what is wrong with me? And I realized Duke Mantis is taking over my brain. So, and Duke has that effect on people. He's charming in a lovably lunk-headed sort of way.
And he has, you mentioned the Twitter meme, he has a Twitter handle. You can still follow Duke Manfist.
Yes, and I would encourage anyone listening to please follow Duke Manfist. He will follow you back when he eventually figures out how to mash the keys and make that happen. Duke is not good with technology. He breaks his phones with regularity. That's a recurring trope in the series. We originally created the Duke Manfist serial, which ran for a number of consecutive weeks. It
sure.
is the length of a short novel. That book will become available. Originally, we were going to release it earlier, and then we had to push it back in order to do Simon Vector. So Duke has never been off the table. He just got moved, the way movies get moved around sometimes.
Sure.
And the Duke novel will be available upcoming. I don't have an actual date yet, but it will not be that much longer before that comes.
Excellent. Well, you know, Duke is a team player. He'll wait his turn.
He always comes through. He may break a lot of stuff, and he may kill a few partners, but he always comes through.
You got me in a great deal of trouble with with Duke Manfist Saving Christmas, because I had used the Scrib utility, and I was reading that on my digital reader over the holidays at my sister's house, while of course everybody else had gone away and was working on something or had gone shopping, and they had very, foolishly left me home with, the 5 or 6 children. And, I got to the end of the series, and I was the one, and I hate to talk about it without spoiling it because I want people to go read it, but the final punchline where, with the final, that accompanies the final piece of art on the book, had me, you know where I am.
Yes, I believe it's very, it's Santa oriented.
It is.
If I'm not mistaken.
It is, but it had me laughing so hard that I literally could not breathe. I scared the kids to death. And, that's a good sign, right?
Well, you know, one of the hardest things that I found about writing Duke is relatively easy compared to writing fiction in general for one reason, and that is that poorly written prose is funnier than elegant prose. So writing a deliberately clunky sentence allows you to write more quickly than you might otherwise, because, you know, it's funnier if it's not as smooth and polished. The problem is that in itself is not funny. So
right.
If the material you're already working with isn't humorous, you're kind of at a loss. So imagine, especially when I was doing the original compilation, having a gun to your head and someone says, be funny, every week for however many consecutive weeks it was that we put that out. I've forgotten the number. That is hard. Writing comedy on a command basis is not easy.
Well, let me help you. There were 22
well
chapters.
Only because Duke's universe is so ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. There for a little while, one of his chief associates is Dr. Coplawyer.
And yes, Dr. Coplawyer.
Dr. Coplawyer. And there for a little while, you were giving him a new name every episode.
He's an officer, an attorney, a doc. He's also a variety of other things for the secret headquarters where Duke works.
Right.
And he always wears all of the uniforms of these various professions. He's always
wearing,
like, a uniform and a bulletproof vest and a 3-piece suit and a white lab coat and a stethoscope and a duty belt holster all at once.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites in the original Duke Manfist series is when Dr. Coplawyer gets to have an action scene and he fights Ninja Crime Lawyer, who is actually his brother-in-law.
His brother-in-law,
Ninja
yes.
Ninja Crime Lawyer is a ninja who fights with legal tactics. And Duke is very much stymied by the restraining order that Ninja Crime Lawyer presents to him. So Crime Lawyer and Cop Lawyer get to go against each other and serve each other with a variety of documents.
That was a memorable scene. All right. Well, Phil, as always, we're pushing time. I think we've touched on the main things that we really wanted to talk about. I think the last thing I had wanted to do with you was, because we are prepping for Doomsday all year this year, I kind of wanted to ask you, what apocalypse you are prepping for? What's your Doomsday scenario that you are prepping for? And, how are you prepared to deal with it?
My scenario has always been being unemployed, but with economies being what they are and Greece collapsing and other nations that follow, I figure it's still being unemployed. It's just being unemployed with everybody else.
All right. So, how are you prepared? How are you prepared to deal with the unemployment apocalypse?
Well, it's your standard apocalypse where everything breaks down. I do the usual stuff. I have bug out bags in multiple locations. I've been long before people started calling it prepping, I was a survivalist back before.
Yes.
that term kind of had negative connotations. I used to read American Survival Guide when I was a teenager and stuff like that. I have, you know, the usual preparations. I'm breaking one of the rules of prepping right now by admitting that I do, but it's kind of, you know, I'm constantly breaking certain rules of self-protection when I have to go and advocate for these things. I've had
well, it's for the greater
publication
good.
Online, themarshallist.com, for years now, and, you know, whenever you are involved in that kind of thing, were you actually to be involved in a public self-defense issue, well, then they would use it to barbecue you. So there's always an element of, I guess you call it self-sacrifice there, in order to get the word out. But the prepping that I do is fairly conventional, and most of it is actually inspired by a publication that was created by one of the companies for which I work. There's a website called socialchaossurvivalguide.com where you can buy the Social Chaos Survival Guide put out by the ISCQC. ISCQC.org is the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and that is a website for which I do some work. I do operations for the website, and I do some other marketing work for them. And the Social Chaos Survival Guide is actually one of the better publications I've seen that touches on lots of different elements of the prepping and survival issue, the game, if you want to call it that, although I hate to belittle
sure.
it by calling it a game. So socialchaossurvivalguide.com is pretty much the site that I refer friends and relatives and people who are curious about the issue. I say, this book will give you the basics better than I can. And that's what I've used as my guide in the personal preparation that I do.
That's great. All right. Well, you know, we tend to lean towards things like giant monsters and zombies and the rise of the machine. And here you're giving us practical information.
Well, if you want to plunge yourself right back into the less than real world, I have two Mac Mullen / Executioner novels coming out this summer.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, those won't have your name on the cover, but
they are Don Pendleton's The Executioner. Poor Mr. Pendleton has since left us. He's passed away, but he sold the rights to the series to Harlequin, the romance novel company.
Yes.
And they put the books out under the Gold Eagle Men's Adventure imprint to the tune of, like, four books every 30 or 45 days. I can't remember exactly, but there's a lot of them. And they're just great pulp adventure. I grew up reading them. My father used to collect them, so I used to read them as a teenager, and now I help write them. It's kind of staggering when you stop and think about it. So I have one called Mac Bowen Radical Edge, which is what they call the Super Bowen books. These are
right. Longer
novels featuring Mac Bowen. And that book officially is out as of June, so you might even be able to get it now. And The Executioner Final Judgment comes out officially in July, but will probably be available slightly before that.
Okay, awesome. And those can be found at most popular bookstores, and even now Walmart is carrying a selection of them.
Yes,
if
yes,
you want to know,
yeah,
right. If you want to know who is writing a given Mac Bowen or Executioner novel, just open the front cover. It is there in the copyright information. Special thanks to
thanks and acknowledgement to so and so for his contribution
right. To
this work.
Well.
Contribution happens to be the entire book.
Right. Well, Phil, let me thank you for your special contribution to the podcast today. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And we'll have to find an excuse to get you back on the show again real soon. So get us some more work that the listeners will enjoy, right?
All right.